greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. All of the prophets of the world have predicted through trend, precedent, pattern of habit, human behavior, that the 20th century would be our last. No prophet predicted beyond the date of 1999. Does this mean we will suddenly run out of time? Will there be a tomorrow after December 31st, 1999?
Tune in for a shortcut through the 20th century.
These last days broadcast and the last days before that glorious day. Part 1.
Monday through Friday from 9 till 11 p.m.
Now what's up?
Right here on WBAI FM.
This is really it.
A shortcut through the 20th century.
So let us remember the past, honor the present, and be amused at the future.
Over listener-supported WBAI FM, non-commercial radio in New York.
The future is in your hands.
Come to a Night Drum fundraiser on Thursday, December 30th, 1999, at the Lab at 1428 Fulton Street between Brooklyn and Kingston Avenues in the People's Republic of Brooklyn from 5:30 p.m. until you say when. We're featuring live music by the Afro-Cuban jazz band Aphrodisia. Plus, special music mix by WBAI's own Nancy Rodriguez, Chet Jackson, Dred Scott Keys, Haptu Selassie, Tony Short, and Chico Alvarez. For tickets, call 212-340-1196. That's 212-340-1196. This is a fundraiser for Night Drum and Adam to help feed the homeless. Brought to you by WBAI.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. We're actually early tonight. We're 30 seconds early, so we're going to start the show. Off the Hook is on the air. Okay, well, we don't have time for that because it's a very busy show tonight. We have all kinds of things to pack into the special end-of-year celebration that we're doing here. End of century, end of life, end of world, whatever it is. It's the end of everything, the end of the world as we know it. This is the last show before all four digits change in the year, and you know what that's going to cause? It's going to cause mayhem, havoc, catastrophe, confusion, and a darn good time for one and all. And, you know, we have so much to talk about tonight that we don't even have time to play this all the way through like we usually do. Isn't that a shame, Isaac?
It's saddening.
It's the last time in 1999. I don't want to say in this century because that's not true, but it's the last time this year that we'll be able to play this.
Have we ever disclosed what that song is, by the way?
We have, but sometimes people don't pay attention or they don't listen to the show where we disclose it. But I can disclose it that it is the band called Klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U. Good luck finding their records. Came out back in 1976, I believe. And this is a song entitled Little Neutrino, which has absolutely nothing to do with Y2K.
But it sounds
good. It sounds really cool. And in fact, when this band came out in the late 70s, people thought they were the Beatles. I know this song sounds nothing like the Beatles, but other songs on the album do. And they didn't have any names on the CD, so people thought, you know, hey, it's got to be the Beatles. Who else could it be? Right. Of course, it was a band from Canada.
Oh, well, you know.
Canada's got a lot of good music, but we'll get into that some other time. This is it. We have a special show that's non-Y2K related, which we'll be getting to in just about 10 minutes, because, well, I don't know, if you've been around, if you've been paying attention over the past 24 hours, it's really hit the fan in ways that you never thought possible. Just when you think that you know what the crisis is, you know that we're focusing on disaster on New Year's Eve, and that's really what everybody's focused on. We're convinced there's going to be some kind of a disaster. I don't know, who was it from on high that said, yeah, terrorists are going to strike on New Year's Eve? You know, someone said that somewhere and we believed it, so naturally we're fighting these terrorists that nobody can see. They're like in another dimension someplace. So Times Square is being riveted down to the ground. They're sealing up all, no, they're taking away the garbage cans. They're sealing the manhole covers, which I think is going to be a phenomenally bad idea if one of them has to, like, you know, vent some steam or something. And they're doing all kinds of other things, too. I think they're sniffing... Dogs are sniffing every single car in every garage for a 75-block area. Now, that's a lot of overtime for dogs, which can really get expensive. So it's... Seattle today canceled their New Year celebration because they're just so nervous and they remember the WTO thing, so they just don't want any part of it, so they canceled it. New York's going to go on, and, of course, that's where I'll be, and Isaac... I believe you'll be there too, right?
No. I've originally planned on. I had this vacation planned out in November.
Right, you shouldn't still be here.
Yeah,
well, it's gonna be a mad rush for the airport.
Well, I was going to be heading down to Penn Station and departing on my Amtrak train. In fact, tomorrow morning.
I can give you a ride there.
Well, that won't be necessary.
It won't be necessary, will it?
Because my mother notified me of something I happened to overlook.
Your tickets are for 1900.
No. Oh. Amtrak was very good about that. Their reservation system 8 months ago managed to figure out my reservation properly. However, I recognized, or rather it was brought to my attention, that upon arriving in New Mexico, when I would attempt to rent a car, I would be unable to do so because in my wonderful fit of paranoia, I do not possess a credit card.
Aha! Well, so can't you just sort of run around flailing in the desert someplace?
Well,
Do you really need a car? I mean, there's not going to be any gas. The gas riots are going to start right after New Year's.
I'm hoping that wouldn't have been necessary, but I actually want to go to New Mexico and, like, tour around, you know, visit Socorro and
Roswell. Yeah, I got news for you. Back in the old days, there weren't cars, and people went to New Mexico where they got off the Amtrak train and they just walked around.
These towns aren't exactly very close to Albuquerque.
So basically, you're going to risk your life staying here in New York because of convenience.
Oh, I'm not going to be in New York.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not going to be in the Great American Southwest like I'd originally planned.
Well, if you're a mile below ground, you are technically still in New York.
True.
Oh, wait, people don't know about that, do they?
No.
I'm sorry.
They do now, though. Thanks a lot, you know?
No, well, they don't know where you found the bomb shelter.
These remnants of the 50s are always around.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, so sounds like you're going to have a dandy time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be right there in Times Square just watching. Just watching what's
well,
going
enjoy.
On. It'll be fun. It'll be a hilarious experience, I'm sure, for one and all. But did you see the post on one of the lists that we're on? Someone said that New York City Police Department bought 200,000 body bags.
Yeah.
You don't find that just a tad odd?
I think it's very odd.
Okay, well, you don't have any expression on your face as if it's like, you know, something totally normal to buy 200,000 body bags.
In a response for a potentially dangerous situation as may occur in the year 2000.
So you think that they actually went out and bought 200,000 body bags?
Yeah, it would be a reasonable purchase.
Well, okay, but they're expecting 2 million people.
Yeah.
That's
that's about a tenth of the actual...
That only accounts for a tenth of the people that could be killed. So, I mean, first of all... They would need to get 800,000 more. No, more than that. 18,000.
If it was a nuclear weapon, you don't have to worry about the core, you know, 100,000 or so, because they're instantly vaporized.
Uh-huh. And so with the body bags.
Right.
Yeah, wherever they're keeping them.
Well, I'm assuming the body bags are far enough away that they would be unaffected and yet close enough to make them easily accessible.
That's right. And plus, there are all kinds of jobs that could be opened as a result of this. People have to carry the body bags over to where the bodies are. They have to load the bodies. They have to take the bodies someplace. The unemployment problem will be solved. So, let's leave it
to NYPD.
Good already. Yeah. Definitely. But I would like some independent verification of this because people like
bags?
To spread rumors like this, and I don't know if it's really.
Let's just say it wouldn't surprise me.
Nothing would surprise me, but 200,000 body bags. And what are they going to do with them if nothing happens, huh? That's enough
you
body
don't
bags
have to
last.
Order any more body bags for a few decades, or maybe not a few decades, maybe a decade or so.
Okay. Any other Y2K things happening this week? This is really the last week
this
Y2K
is the last
things
week
can happen.
Well, you're going to see Y2K things happening most of next year, with February 29th and all that rollover.
Oh, so you mean it's not over yet?
It's
we still have
over.
More
this
dates
is,
to worry
this
about.
This is going to be a very long and
yeah, but the thing is, Isaac, nothing's happening. That's the thing. And I've been saying this now for a year that everyone's panicking, saying, "Oh, 9/9/99, that's going to be the first thing," and January 1st, 1999, because that's a year from the date.
And, there were some
and now January 1st, 2000,
there.
Nothing's happening.
There were some failures.
There was nothing to think of. I mean,
well, you will feel this one.
I will. Okay, tell
You'll
me what's going to
one.
Happen. Please, tell me.
What's
going to
happen? I don't know what's going to happen. If I could tell you what's going to happen, I'd...
Hazard a guess.
Hazard a guess? Okay. As close to being... All right. As realistically as possible, you're probably going to see some minor failures in some convenience things.
Like convenience stores?
Perhaps. Basically, you walk into a store and they'll be telling you, well, the cash register's down, we don't know what happened.
And we don't know how to count, so we can't take your money.
Well, very likely they're going to just have to go back to paper, which, unfortunately, some of their clerks may or may not know how to do, but it will take a little more time, and you'll notice some very definite defects from it. This is just for January 1st and the immediate days after. Now, this assumes that power is still on and, mm-hmm. you know, all of the particularly bad things don't happen.
I think everyone's going to get a false sense of security once everything is over. You know, they're going to say, oh, everything's cool now, and then the computers are going to crash for a different reason, because that's what you have to realize, is that technology is always vulnerable to something. And, you know, knowing when the data is going to change is probably the easiest thing in the world to avoid. But how are you going to know when some vital component fails or a piece of software just suddenly runs into a bug?
That always happens. But
always happens, but on a massive scale.
The thing with Y2K is that it would... the whole point with Y2K is that it is a single date where there is a potential for a very broad range of failures to occur simultaneously, mm-hmm. or within enough of a time frame to make them nearly catastrophic as they different minor effects add up. But we'll see what happens. It could very well be a very slow progression where systems are failing and the contingencies are in place, but as the contingencies begin to lose their effectiveness, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden you see some major failures in April or something like that. Who knows?
Who knows? I think that's what it boils down to, is who knows.
But I still got my water bottled and my foodstuffs at the ready.
Yeah, well, we'll just see if who knows turns into who cares.
And this, of course, ignores all the terrorist possibilities.
Right. We have some little bit of entertainment here that someone sent us. First of all, speaking of entertainment, this has nothing to do with Y2K except that it takes place right in the middle of it. I was notified that there's a cartoon up in Canada, speaking of Canada, called Kevin Spencer. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Kevin Spencer.
Well, it's supposed to be a very funny cartoon. It's a Canadian cartoon. It appears on their comedy network up there. So I don't think we get it here, but...
Well, you have DSS. Don't you get...
Yeah, but I don't get that.
Like that.
It appears on CTV. I don't get CTV. But in any event, if I get that other dish, which I'm trying to get, then I can get CTV, but that's another discussion right there.
Right.
There's an episode where one of the characters in the cartoon attends a 2600 meeting and learns how to rig an old Motorola cell phone to scan cells.
Woohoo!
Yeah. You know, not knowing anything about this, right away I feel better about it than I do about the whole MTV and 2020 thing. I just have a feeling these guys are going to get it. It's going to be funny.
Well, even if they don't get it, it's still going
to
be funny.
Well, I've just never had a problem with people in other countries, particularly Canada, doing things like this. They tend to sort of figure out what's going on. Anyway, if you're in Canada, it airs Saturday, January 1st at midnight. Saturday night, January 1st at midnight, yeah. So it's right after the ball drops here.
You have this show about a cartoon character.
Yeah, 12:05 a.m. on... Saturday night, or is it Saturday morning?
I guess it would be Saturday morning.
I'm not even sure. January 1st, midnight, or 12:05 on CTV. So
that's kind of neat.
If somebody sees that, let us know how it is.
Here's an idea. Why doesn't somebody tape it?
Yeah, actually, well, I've made arrangements with somebody
you
send me a tape. So we'll see if that works out.
Well, send that on to me, because I'd like to see it.
Speaking of entertainment, someone sent us a song, and we're going to play this before we go into our next segment, where things have hit the fan. This is the official song of the Millennium, Y2K. And it comes with an official Dance of the Millennium, which we can't show you. It's written by someone named Daryl Sherney, and they sent us a copy of the CD here. So we're going to play the CD, and then we'll be back with the rest of Off the Hook. Stay tuned.
Make an IBM out of old spare parts. They could forecast the weather, do incredible math. They could track the cosmos on a million-year path. Now, do you think computer geeks were so dumb that they could not foresee the millennium? Y2K, Y2K. Where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K. Now, the moment that the year 2000 strikes,
computer's gonna do anything they like. They can back up the sewer, shut the power down, send a nuclear warhead to your hometown. And you won't get your food at the Safeway no more, 'cause the hoarders and the looters have emptied the stores. Y2K, Y2K, where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K. Now will you be on the farm just a killing the sod, or will you join a street gang where you're killing your rock? Will you hide in your condo with your kids and wife, or be stuck in a prison for the rest of your life? Oh, this year is 1999. It's the last year that things are gonna be fine. Y2K, Y2K, where will you be on that fateful day? Now will you be in New York City eating pigeons and rats, or holed up in a cave eating bugs and bats? Will you be meditating at the pyramids, or in your Idaho bunker just flipping your lid? Oh, I wanna know what you're gonna do, 'cause I might just wanna follow you. Y2K, Y2K, where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K. Now the wizards who created this computer crash are selling the solutions for piles of cash. Did you think the corporations were giving an inch? What do you think the army will do in a pinch? Oh, could it be a little computer flaw? Is there excuse for instituting martial law? Y2K, Y2K, where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K. Now will you be in Jerusalem waiting for Christ, but his website is down, so forget it, no dice? Will you be on 42nd Street at Old Times Square, where the ball that falls is stuck in the air? Will you be on the space shuttle afraid to land, 'cause even all of its computers are jammed? Y2K, Y2K, where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K, 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 where will you be on that fateful day? Y2K.
Okay. As the beepers go off.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's Y2K by Daryl Sherney, and you can find out more about him by going to www.darrylcherney.com, and that's the official song of the millennium. It's pretty right on the money there,
I think. Pretty fun. I like
that. Yeah. All right. Well, we're finished with Y2K feature for this year anyway. Now it's on to the next crisis, which really hit us. It's kind of funny how this happened. I was sitting around yesterday, minding my own business, you know, just doing the things that I do. And all of a sudden, I got a message from somebody wanting to know my reaction to the lawsuit. And I'm like, what
lawsuit?
What lawsuit? What's going on here? Turns out that a court motion has been filed against 2600 in a courtroom in California. That's right. That's not entirely true, and we'll get to the technicalities in a few minutes. But yeah, there was this this motion filed, and it was sent to us by email. I missed it. I totally missed the email because it went to webmaster, and I didn't read the mail in time. So yes, apparently now you recall we might have talked about this a couple of months ago, and it's been on the webpage for that amount of time too. That encryption for DVD technology was cracked, and people have been spreading the news of this around. The encryption was not very difficult to crack, from what I understand. But the industry's response has been, instead of trying to fix it or figure out what went wrong or what they did wrong or how they could maybe repair the damage, their reaction in typical big business way is to simply intimidate people and get them to remove any mention of this from their websites, and maybe it'll go away. So what they did was they sent out a piece of email, and this is the really funny thing. They sent out a piece of email to everybody who was listed as someone who had the information on their website. And, of course, 2600 is one of those entities. But the funny thing is, when they sent out the email, they sent a carbon copy of the mail to everybody. Now, those of you familiar with sending email, there's two ways to send copies to lots of people. One is the CC command, or CC flag, and the other is BCC, which means blind carbon copy, which means you don't see the other people. But they didn't do that. Apparently, they didn't know about that feature. They sent CC, so we got to see the names of everybody.
And I'd imagine you all talked to each other.
We all started talking to each other because, hey, what better way to talk about what's happened to all of us than to simply send mail back and forth? And thanks to these nice legal people, they gave us the information that we needed to contact everybody who was served, sort of served, with these papers. And that's how we got our guest tonight, in fact, for the radio show. We have two guests with us right now. We have Tom joining us from Germany. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And we have Matthew joining us from the United States. Perhaps we could each go over your background. Tom, we'll start with you. Your background in the whole DVD escapade, starting from whenever it began.
Well, it actually began a few months ago when the DVD disencryption first went on the web. And there were a couple of sites that started to immediately copy this information and spread it around. And one of the sites was RhythmCX. And I found that site and started to put up a copy of it myself. And it didn't take very long, about a week after I started copying RhythmCX, that that site received some kind of legal letter. I have never read it, or I don't know what exactly went on there, but the site went down. And so I took it up to myself to keep my list of mirrors updated, to put new information on the site, new versions of the software. And due to some media attention, my site quickly became one of the primary sites mirroring this information, providing links to other sites that contained the software and information and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're over there in Germany, and you're being served with a notice from a California court. How does that make you feel?
A bit weird, actually. One is that I don't think that anything California County Court does decide will apply to me, but I'm not sure on that. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm a bit confused. And the other thing is that I have received about 36 hours prior notice of this, so I have zero chance of coming to California or finding a lawyer to represent me or anything like that. So I feel like there's absolutely nothing I can do about this.
But the hearing is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, I believe, right?
Yeah.
In California. All right, Matthew, you were involved in the whole Linux aspect of this. You want to tell us something about that?
Sure. I started the what we call the Livid project, which is what we abbreviated for Linux Video and DVD. And one of the aspects of the project we wanted to develop was DVD playback support for Linux. For those of you who don't know, you can play DVD movies on your PC, which typically runs Windows, but there's no software available to play DVDs for those running Linux, and there's approximately 10 to 15 million Linux users nation or worldwide. I'm not sure what the numbers are. And one of the things we really wanted to do was to be able to play and watch the DVDs under the operating system we developed for. The code in question, which people are really are getting hit on about this, is called the DECSS code. And this code was actually written to exploit the DVD encryption scheme under Windows. And they used part of the code that was developed under Linux through our project in the DECSS, which completed. There's two aspects to the CSS decryption, and one of them was developed through the Linux project, and then the DECSS picked it up and were able to finish it off. And from there, we started the project. I run and maintain the website, the mailing list, and the code repository, and so they felt that they'd send a notice out to me is kind of the way of recognizing the project.
I see. So basically this whole thing started because you couldn't play DVDs under Linux.
Correct.
Right. So it wasn't a massive scheme to defraud the DVD industry and bring it down to its knees.
No. contrary to what some of the lawyers are putting in their press briefs, we were not trying to, we weren't out to just break the scheme for kicks and giggles. We were trying to watch the movies under Linux.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they claim that with the code you can do disk copying, but I have yet to see any application under Linux that can write DVDs from the movie DVD. So copying is not possible right now and won't be for, I can imagine, quite a while.
Interesting. Now, how could the DVD industry have done things differently from the beginning so that this wouldn't have been such a problem for them?
Well, they were kind of bound up front. The encryption scheme is flawed because of the U.S. government export restrictions at the time, which was restricted them by using 40-bit keys. And what they're actually doing is they're using two 40-bit keys, one on the drive side and then one on the decoder, which is the part that you pull the data off using the drive and then you descramble the data to get the picture with either a decoder card or a software decoder. And in order for them to increase their chances of this not being broken, they could have used a higher bit, using more bits of encryption. The other thing that's kind of interesting about this is, although they have a 40-bit key set, they're only using approximately 10 to 12% of the key range. Anytime you've got a set of bits set for encryption, you've got this range of available different values you could use, and they're not even using the full key set. And to determine all possible keys within the key range they're using would only take about 3 minutes to decode on any modern PC. So it's really a weak encryption scheme. I've talked to several people in the DVD forum, and they've said that the CSS really ended up being not to stop copying protection, but to prevent what they call otherwise fair use of the movie. For example, if you were to give a presentation and you wanted to cite a scene in Star Wars, like a VHS tape, you could just fast forward it to the point and hit uh-huh. play during your presentation.
Right.
Well, with the DVD encryption and the way the software players are set up, this helps prevent people from using little movie clips in a presentation, taking a screenshot, using it like a background on the computer, which have all been determined as legal uses if you own the movie.
Uh-huh.
Tom,
what has been your immediate reaction to getting this? I know you've set up a mailing list for everybody.
Yeah, that's right. The first thing I did after receiving this letter was to send a reply, of course, because they sent the actual content of the letter in Microsoft Word format, which I can't read because I'm a Linux or Linux, depending on how you pronounce it, user as well. But the second thing I did was setting up a mailing list for everyone involved so that we could not only get in touch but also keep in touch and talk about how we can defend ourselves against this, what I've called harassment and threatening on various occasions.
Mm-hmm. What's been the general feeling so far from the people you've talked to, especially the other co-defendants?
Very, very positive. I've received a lot of support from various people, including a lot of lawyers, legal experts, attorneys, and people like that. And, one thing, for example, I can say is that there will be someone tomorrow at the court to represent at least some of us.
That's good.
Someone who is an attorney working in the area, so we have legal representation on the case, which is a very good thing, I think, because various legal experts that I've talked to via email have all said that this whole case has little or no merit whatsoever and should probably be thrown out of the court without even hearing all of it.
Well, it seems pretty clear that it's an intimidation tactic. It's meant to make people think twice before they reverse engineer any kind of technology and send kind of a chilling effect through the whole community. I don't think they're counting on this kind of a reaction from the various people involved. For instance, we put something up on our website inviting people to join us, to put their own mirrors up on their websites as well. And we were thinking, you know, in the course of today, we put this up earlier today, we were thinking in the course of the day, maybe we'd make up for the people that dropped off, because initially when these papers were emailed or served or however you want to say it, some people kind of got spooked by that. And that's the intent, to get people spooked, to think, hey, I should go to jail or pay a huge amount of money for this. It's not worth it. So we lost a handful of sites. We wanted to replace those sites. We figured if we got 10, you know, throughout the day, that would make up for it. As of a few hours ago, before I left for the show, we were over 30, and they just keep coming in. And I think the same thing is being repeated on other sites that that also mirror the files. People are lining up to support us and to offer all kinds of defenses as to why it's important to allow this kind of thing and not to threaten people who figure things out.
Yeah, definitely. I've had about 6 of the mirrors on on my list to drop out only a few hours after receiving the letters.
Uh-huh.
And when I talked to you earlier, I said that 5 new have appeared. That has changed in the past 45 minutes or what it's been to a total of 7 new. So my list is plus 1 due to this legal harassment.
Uh-huh. So I think that's the kind of reaction that we can expect, is for people to not want to stand for this kind of thing. It's really frightening. But let's talk to the people that might not really appreciate the nuances of DVD technology. Why should the average person care about this?
There are a lot of answers to this, basically depending on what you're interested in. For example, if you're interested in DVD technology, then I think that you should be interested in the people who implement the technology and develop the technology and the protocols to actually know what they're doing. And the weakness of the CSS encryption shows that, at least in parts of the field, they are not. I wonder how many other weaknesses there are in the DVD, in the whole DVD technology, for example. The same thing is, if you're interested in culture or technology and science, then you know that peer review or other kinds of review by people who know the field is very, very important to our science and to our technology, and especially in complex fields like cryptography. And any try to keep such a complex issue completely hidden from those who know what they're doing is doomed to fail, as CSS has proven once again.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'd like to make a point here on that topic. The CSS algorithm does not prevent copy protection or copying. You can still do what they call a bitwise copy of the disk. You know, and that's what I was talking about, where they're trying to prevent the otherwise fair use. And so the whole argument that, you know, by distributing the source code, you're violating the copyright is kind of mute point, because the CSS doesn't prevent copying anyway. The other thing that's interesting about DVD technology that most people don't realize is they build in region locking into these discs. For example, if you live in the United States, you buy a player or buy movies and then move to, say, Germany, they have a different region of different regions for their movies and different a region lock for their players. So you would not be able to play, say, a movie bought in Wisconsin in Germany or in England or any of the other areas where they cross region lines.
What's the rationale behind that?
What they're trying to do there is, again, it's part of the copy protection. If someone, for example, in Germany were to do some reverse engineering and start making copies, that if those discs were ever sent to the United States, but they wouldn't be able to play in the United States players. You've heard on the news about all the copy violations going on in countries such as China or in Indonesia, where people are mass copying audio CDs. And so this would be a way for them to try to prevent this, whereas if they were to get a disc, if they were to buy a movie in Indonesia, make a copy, it could not be sold to people in the United States.
Actually, on that very point, I do have a DVD drive, of course, and I do watch DVD movies, and I'm a big fan of director cuts, original versions, stuff like that. So if I want to view original versions and German versions, I have a big problem here, because I can only set my player to one region, either United States or Germany, and I'm allowed to switch between them only a limited time, 5 times, I think, and after that, it will be impossible for me to switch again.
I'm just trying to imagine the same kind of restriction taking place for audio CDs. It would be absurd.
Yeah, it really is a something to really question what they were thinking. Mm-hmm. On a smaller scale, you could kind of make the analogy, you know, if you're in Illinois, bought a player and then moved to Indiana and tried to buy a movie, you couldn't play it there, you know, or you'd only be able to buy movies and players in Illinois alone.
It seems almost like the DivX mentality, where, you know, you could only play a movie a certain amount of times, and then it would expire.
Yep, I agree. It's and there has not yet been a media that has proven itself to be indestructible to copying. Mm-hmm. And that really wasn't the motivation behind, I know, our project and most of the people behind the source code that has gotten them in such a frail. It was just to understand the technology and to play movies in operating systems that the industry did not see a need for. And there are a lot of users that are very interested in getting this technology and being able to play these movies in other environments.
Now, when you first started with the project, the DVD industry, I guess, pretty much thought they were impenetrable. Was that the feeling you got from them?
I didn't ever. That's the funny thing. This is the first I've ever heard. I never got a cease and desist letter, like several of the other sites did. I actually got a lot of support from people in the DVD industry. I got documentations and specifications for several, DVD decoder cards. You know, they minused out some of the parts for the CSS encryption, but we will still be able to use the documentation to get, the blunt work done for decoding and hardware, and so from the manufacturer's point of view, the people that make the cards and the video cards and the decoder cards for the computers were very happy to see that people were going to write the drivers and the support so they could have their products work under Linux, which is, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of people for hearing a growing operating system.
Uh-huh.
So it's the resistance we're seeing is from really from the very top of the DVD, or the people involved with DVD. It's really not all the way through the industry.
Well, it seems to me that, and I've heard this from a number of people, that they don't really expect that they can simply call back all this, all the files that are out there that have been spread around the whole internet. But what they do want to do is make it a precedent so that people won't be able to do things like this in the future, so that even trying to do something like this will result in bankruptcy or just legal harassment of all sorts. And I think that's basically what they're attempting to do here, is intimidate us.
I agree. The intimidation tactic. And it, you know, and again, you look, if you were to see some of the email addresses that they were sending people to the people that were having the sites.
Yeah, there are some we can't say on the air, but
yeah. It's funny because you know a lot of those are aliases. I wouldn't be surprised if some of those addresses went to the same person. So, you know, mm-hmm. two or three people were getting the mail multiple times because, you know, they have different aliases. And and we're at the point now with technology and the internet where, you know, trying to stop something like this, and, you know, it's like you guys have been talking about, where one site goes down and three more pop up.
That's right. That's right. And that's the nature of the net. It's not an evil thing. It's basically keeping information out there. And you can't legislate information. You can't restrict it so that people aren't allowed to talk about certain things. We've seen the authorities try this countless times to make things illegal that just don't make any sense, such as being able to tune your radio dial to 800 megahertz and listen to something that's in the clear. They rather than fix it, rather than encrypt it, they make it illegal and send people to prison for just tuning a radio dial. If we accept things like this, they become the norm, and people accept it into the future, and that's the way laws are written. And if we stand up, it might be painful if we stand up against this kind of thing, but I think it's worth the battle. At least I sure hope so. I'd like to read something that someone sent us right before we went on the air. Basically, is a lot of people have been sending us all kinds of email, pretty much a deluge. As if things weren't busy enough, this has really made things extremely, extremely challenging. Has anyone even bothered to mention the fact that the idea of copy protection is fundamentally broken from an information theoretical point of view? It isn't possible to copy protect the DVD movie because you must transmit the information from the DVD to your AV system in unencrypted form. The same problem exists with Macrovision, but here the problem is twofold. Not only can you easily get a copy of the decrypted information with or without the CSS decryption software, but you don't even need to decrypt it. You can simply blindly copy the encrypted data onto another DVD-ROM, and that pirated copy will play just as well as the original. This technology isn't yet available on the commercial market and may never be, but it is certainly not beyond someone with a good bit of technical know-how. Don't get me wrong, I think it would be a bad thing for people to shamelessly copy DVD movies, as the resulting inflation of prices would hurt the paying consumers who legitimately acquire movies. DVD is still a new technology and hasn't yet fully entered the mass market. The distribution of pirated movies would seriously injure this new market. But the whole point of the CSS code is not to provide a way to pirate movies, it is to allow the media to be viewed on systems lacking the commercial force behind them. There isn't any other way for many to play DVD movies on a non-Intel or non-Microsoft computer. If the commercial industry was so concerned about the threat of piracy, they should have worked with these parties rather than tossing them aside and forcing them to reverse engineer their own systems and write their own software support. On copy protection in general, we have seen software copy protection broken, PlayStation games duplicated, MP3 songs spread rampantly across the Internet. For now, the DVD format has an advantage because the volume of data makes it impractical for free, limitless distribution, like the MP3s that continue to steal artist profits. But that advantage will not last. Already, portable storage on the order of 4 gigabytes is available. Whether that will fall into a price range to make piracy worthwhile remains to be seen. However, I think that the pirating of any type of media is a necessary evil. In most cases, it provides a price control, which regulates the cost of a medium and hopefully falls into a reasonable range. In the PlayStation game market, it keeps vendors from raising the prices above what the average consumer is willing to spend. This eventually will benefit both the consumer and the retailer. An equilibrium price will be reached that most consumers will be willing to purchase at, maximizing the number of people acquiring the game through legal means. Hopefully, this translates directly to more profit for the company. All said, any new technology will eventually fall to the level of the streets, to borrow a famous quote, and we see this more as we become a more techno-savvy society. There isn't anything the media vendors can do about this, and I think that by now they should recognize that. In this case, I think that the DVD industry is doing more to hurt themselves than any threat the CSS code ever presented. By shutting off the important and growing consumer base who is fed up with buggy and cumbersome mainstream software, they are generating adversity in this community that would otherwise be happy to consume DVDs and play them on their Linux PCs or Unix workstations. The more obstacles thrown in the way of this community, the more they will reach out to overcome them, even if it has to be done far outside of the U.S. where their legal trappings won't reach. And that comes from someone who wishes to be identified as a Silicon Valley engineer. Isaac, what's your take on all this?
Well, I could disagree with a lot of the points in that, but some of them are valid.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly don't know that much about the issue to make an intelligent commentary on it. So.
Okay. Callers, our guest, do you have anything to add to that?
I picked up one little bit of information out of that letter that I thought was a good point, was the buggy players under Windows. I would say over half the DVD software programs for Windows are I wouldn't put them past a beta stage as far as their reliability and their playback quality and their resource utilizations. I've got one of my roommates that has a PC and he runs primarily Windows, and he's tried 3 or 4 different players and he's only been able to get one to work. And the software player, you know, he's got a 500 meg CPU and he's got some hardware decoding going on there, and he still gets frame skipping, and the quality of the player is just really not there. And I think that's a good point to be made, that the player that's going to be the player that we're developing under Linux is going to be, you know, highly reliable high playback quality and all these things that the DVD industry was saying they were going to deliver, but they have not yet.
We're going to be taking some phone calls, 212-209-2900, but I'd like to ask each of you what your plans are. Do you have any doubts here as to whether it's worth the effort to continue this, or are you prepared for a long fight? What do your instincts tell you?
Well,
go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, okay. I think that what I'm doing is first trying to find out what the hell is happening over there. I'm very much removed from everything in the United States, and I don't know much about your precise laws and legal situation and stuff like that.
Well, basically, we've all gone mad over here.
Yeah, I think so too sometimes, but I'm trying to figure out what is happening and what it means to me. I still think that when they actually want to try to do anything to me, they have to come to Germany, so I'm waiting for that. But basically, I'm preparing to gather any information that might be useful to me and support the movement with mailing lists and web space and whatever I can afford. And, yeah, basically, I'm preparing for a long fight because this is just the first stage. This is, I think, the intimidation phase. And if that doesn't work, they get out the real guns. And I think it will take a long time until this is resolved. And I want to do a lot and putting a lot of efforts into this. Of course, my resources are limited, especially in the financial area. So I probably can't do everything I want to do, but I will do everything I can do because I think this is at least morally highly questionable, whatever they're doing, no matter how much legal ground it has.
Well, that's the real danger right there. They have virtually bottomless pocketbooks here. They can spend as much as they want intimidating us, and we have limited funds. So we're going to have some kind of moral backing behind us if we have any hope of surviving this.
Yeah, if nothing else, they can just drag this thing out in court until we're all broke and have to give up.
Mm-hmm. You guys think that's a possibility?
Yeah, I think it is. Well, several large corporations have done this to private individuals, and of the 70 or so people who received this letter, I think about 68 or 69 are private persons.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, how do you feel about this?
I agree. They do have the resources. I also wanted to touch the point on how this is just the first stage. They just filed for an injunction order, which basically... they just want the data to come down. And from there, they could then move on to actually filing other lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
To actually try to get compensation for what they would call damages.
Well, I mean, their abilities of tracking people down don't seem exactly well-defined. I mean, Tom, they even got your country wrong. Am I right about that?
Yeah, that's right. The letter says I live in Denmark, while... exactly, I live in Germany, which is like, the northern part where I live is 200 miles away, but I don't speak a word of Danish, so I'm happy they sent the letter in English. And there's a lot of other mistakes in there as well. For example, you mentioned that the indestructibility of the net, which, by the way, was intentionally constructed by the U.S. government when the Internet or ARPANET was originally conceived. And several of the sites that are mentioned in this letter are not websites hosting the DCSS information, but stuff like Deja.com, which is just an archive of Usenet news. So they are trying to sue archives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone else brought up the point that it actually points to a specific file in a particular directory on a particular website. If you simply rotate that name a few times a day, they're going to have to issue all kinds of notices to that particular address as it changes. So it's really kind of weird the way they did it.
Well, this entire motion that they filed is somewhat laughable.
Yeah, I laughed.
Improperly executed. I would imagine that more than half of the people who are cited there don't fall under the jurisdiction of the Superior Court of the State of California, County of Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a joke. Mm-hmm. I hope it gets laughed out by the judge and whoever else is present in the courtroom.
But what happens if it doesn't? What happens if they actually succeed in getting an injunction? What does that mean?
Well, I think it means I'm becoming an expatriate because this is a joke.
I don't agree.
yeah, I think it, it's also a bit more subtle than this, because I've quite recently learned that the law company that is filing this injunction is known to be one of the best in the business, so I don't think they're stupid. I think what they're trying to do is establish a couple of facts and precedents. For example, that if they get this injunction through, there are several things in this that would not be easily questioned afterwards. For example, the fact that the DCSS encryption algorithm is a trade secret, or the fact that we who are providing the information on how weak it actually is, are willingly and with malicious intent trying to damage the DVD industry. I think if this injunction goes through, facts like this will not be easily questioned afterwards.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the true danger.
That's the point of this, but from the way it looks, it doesn't look like they spent a lot of time on it.
Well, we'll have to see. It's interesting, too, that they filed the, well, they didn't file the injunction yet, but they issued the complaint against me personally, not the 2600 website. Apparently what they did was they did a whois of the actual site, and then they simply tried to serve those people based on their email addresses. It's not exactly the best way to find somebody. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I even missed it. It didn't get to me at all. So who knows if the injunction time comes by, how they're going to try and serve these things. It could take a very long time.
Well, from the document you just showed me, they named 500 John Doe's.
Yeah. So. I don't know how they're going to do it. In fact, we got an email. I'm John Doe number 78, and this is my comment. It's really something. But if they want to serve me an injunction, I can tell you where I'm going to be on Friday night. I'm 42nd Street and Broadway watching the ball come down, so they're welcome to...
Be careful.
Yeah. Well, I know how to avoid process servers, if that's what you mean.
Well, people laugh at Y2K, but I'm telling you, you're going to feel it this time.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. 212-209-2900. Let's take some phone calls in the brief time we have left. Let's see. Shall we go over here? Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Off the Hooks. Rich the Rebel is wishing you and yours a happy new year.
Thank you very much, Rich, for the Rebel, for calling up. Sounded like a pre-recorded announcement. That's the best way to hear from you. Well, that's the best way to hear from you. Okay, how about this one? Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, you still got those guys on the phone?
Yes, I do.
For the guy in Germany, does American law extend that far in terms of process serving? Does it have any effect on him if he doesn't obey it?
Well, to be correct, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. As far as I do know, there is nothing that they can immediately do, but there is some legal cooperation between Germany and the United States, so there might be something that they could do. I have also been informed by a lawyer that appearing before the court, either by telephone or in person or by representative, might put me under the jurisdiction.
That's exactly what
of
it will
court.
Do.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget the case of eToys, which we talked about a couple of weeks on this show. Someone over in Switzerland was able to have their website shut down by a court in the United States. It can happen.
Yeah, this can happen, but I don't know how exactly they want to make it happen, but I'm pretty sure that they're professionals and they know a way to make it happen, and that's what I'm afraid of, that they know much more than I do.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's move on over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask what anyone thinks about the fact that it probably seems on a mass market level more like a standalone DVD players for television and such will be the norm, and I don't really see that there's a threat to any of the DVD industry from those, which are probably going to be the majority.
Okay, so what is your question?
Well, I'm just wondering what anybody thinks about the fact that, like, the threat is just minimal because most people are going to be using standalone DVD players in the future, I would assume, that hook up to televisions and whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I just find, you know, I just don't see what their real threat is, what the threat is to the DVD industry, because most people aren't going to be doing that anyway.
Guys, what do you think of that?
I think they're seeing the threat. Just as you could take a audio CD, make a copy of it in a computer, and then play it in your home audio player.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm sure you've got a friend that's got a CD burner. You know, I think they're worried that the same thing will happen to movies where, you know, there'll be the guy down the street with the DVD writer, and people are just going to go over there and have DVD burning parties or something like that.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's possible to do this with CDs right now, and I don't see the music industry collapsing.
Well, I may be way off the wall here, but I recall a device that I keep under my television right now called a VCR, which plays VHS tapes.
Uh-huh.
And if I hook another VCR up underneath it, I can make many copies, but I don't see, you know, Blockbuster going out of business.
Well, you're such an anarchist.
Well, you know, not that I've done
but the thing is, I think the difference here, though, is that making a copy of a DVD, making a copy of a CD, it's perfect. It's the exact duplicate. You know, there's no generational loss. Right. Whereas with VHS tapes, there is some
from
loss.
A legal standing, it should make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take one more phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes.
Oops, I'm sorry. My finger slipped. Oh, boy. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah? You want to say something on the air?
Oh, here.
Okay. We have a secretary, I guess.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Is this Emmanuel?
This is off the hook. Want something said on the air?
Yes. I sent Emmanuel an email. It's sort of maybe a little bit of strange of an email, but it's regarding hackers and the government using them to solve some of their problems, having something like the Secret Service start a hackers club with an award and maybe even scholarships for kids who can hack into certain systems, give them symbols so that they know that they've hacked into the system, and give them rewards for it.
This is your idea?
It's my idea. It sounds... My son thinks I'm crazy, but I don't think so. I think most people who hack do it for fun and for the challenge.
Well, that's true, and that's what they'll continue to do it for, not for a government agency and not for some kind of a merit badge.
But don't you think that the talent that's involved in hacking could be used to help our country?
Well, yeah, and I think it already is used in that way, and I think what the problem we're seeing these days is that people are simply taking anything that hackers do as something evil and not listening to the real message behind it. Hackers, for the vast majority of cases, don't go out destroying systems, don't cause problems, don't erase things or sell data on the open market, but yet we still want to classify them as terrorists because we don't understand what it is that they're doing. I'd like to discuss this more. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and we do have important guests on the line that need to give out some information so that we can continue this fight in the weeks ahead. Tom, let's start with you. How can people get a hold of you and voice their support?
Well, first of all, I'd invite people to visit my website, which is at www.lemuria.org. It is www.lemuria.org, and then at /DCSS with the E, everything except the E capital, and you will find the DCSS defendants page there, where I try to collect some information. I will put all the conversation with the law firm that is trying to get at me from California somewhere on that page, so everything they send me will be put on that webpage immediately. I hope they don't make too many grammar mistakes. And you can also reach me by email, which is tom@lemuria.org. And I think I'll try to answer any emails I receive, as long as they're not too stupid. And I'm really trying to put some punch into this, because I think they are trying to just intimidate us and hope that we all fall over without any fight. And my personal goal is to make sure that doesn't happen, that even if we lose, we put up a fight.
Okay, and I think we can count on a lot of people to also back us up on that. Matthew, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, a while ago when the first cease and desist orders came out to those few websites, I started a campaign, and we just kind of let it sit for a while, and now I think we're really interested in getting it kicked off, and we're still a few pieces short of what we need for it, but we're calling it the Open DVD campaign. It's found at opendvd.org, and what we're trying to do is give out information, like we've been doing on this radio station, about CSS, how it's flawed, what we're trying to do. We're not trying to bring down the movie industry, and also raise awareness to what's going on. We've got a lot of behind-the-scenes support so far, a lot of the big names in the open source community have said they're going to pledge support and, for this campaign.
Okay, how can people get a hold of you? Because we're down to our last 15 seconds here.
Just go to the opendvd.org website. Okay. There'll be information on there. If you don't see it tonight, I'll be updating it the next couple of days.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys for joining us, and we'll be standing alongside you in the trenches there.
Thank you.
Okay. And, of course, if anybody wants to support us in this, please go to the website, www.2600.com, read the articles there. Mirror your site to contain the files, too. We can do that as much as we want.
Become John Doe number 1142.
That's right, because we haven't been issued an injunction yet, and we intend to continue as long as we can. Well, that's it for 1999. Isaac, you want to say goodbye since the world's going to end?
Yeah, just, folks, keep awake, keep your eyes open, and think about what's going on for Y2K, and you'll be fine.
Okay, I'm just going to run down to Times Square with reckless abandon and see what happens. Yeah, we'll talk about it next week. Till then. Yeah, if there is a next week. Till then, have a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2000. Good night.
I couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bumper.